Welcome to another episode of Mark My Words, Don't Forget the Colon. This episode is the last episode from our Integrity mini-series, and I am joined by Jason, Katia, and Silvana from the Turnitin team. They've all had different experiences working in educational software, so I'm excited to hear what they have to say about the way that misconduct and integrity influence us as individuals and in society as a whole. So I'm joined today by Jason Gibson, and we're going to have a chat about integrity and what it does for an individual and how you can actually benefit from integrity as a skill and as a personal quality, as opposed to just a concept that's out there wishy-washy floating around in the universe. Thanks for joining me today, Jason. I was wondering if I could throw you right into the deep end with what are the benefits of integrity?
Yeah, of course. So one of the main things is the fact that when it comes to career aspirations and just general aspirations overall, not just career aspirations, it's a skill that many people look for in a person. So when you look at some famous quotes, for instance, Warren Buffett, when they talk about hiring for some of the organizations that he's in charge of, integrity is one of the main skills and personality traits that they look for in a person, because you can have all of the, you know, university degrees, you can have all of the credentials, but without integrity, not a lot of it really means anything. And also as well, having integrity as a core skill is going to help lead you on to that correct or right path going forwards.
So how does integrity present itself as a skill?
So when you think of integrity as a skill, it's doing things like giving credit to somebody for an idea. It is taking responsibility for an action, whether that action was a positive one or a negative one, depending on what happened. So when you think about the way that it's taught and the way that we think about it in an educational sense, let's say, there was some work done by someone called Carol Dweck some time ago. And the work that she did is now referred to as what, when we look at things like growth mindset. So it's all about making the right decision, which might be the more difficult path, but it's the right thing to do. So it helps you learn in an academic sense, but also in a personal sense, that doing the right thing is going to be more beneficial for you in the long run. So you're going to have, you know, let's say, for example, you've got the option to either cheat on an exam and get a pass, or you've got the option to actually learn the information to pass that exam. So almost like passing is a byproduct of you having the information. By doing that, it means that your capacity to learn, the skills, your actual knowledge as well is going to be so much higher. And all of that is because of you having integrity as a core skill and as a core value.
So building on from like a growth mindset, what outcomes of misconduct can come about when an individual isn't caught? So when you're talking about personal development and growth from this growth mindset and having integrity, what is the flip side when people don't have integrity and that kind of goes unchecked in a personality?
There's a ton of things that can happen. Obviously, when we think about integrity as a skill and as a value, it means that from a young age, potentially anyway, or from secondary school or even in university, you've trained your mind to understand that doing the right thing, even if it's the more difficult choice, is the best thing to do. There is a lot of research that shows if you are willing to cheat, to plagiarize, to do various things in an educational setting, that is then going to translate into your personal and professional life. So there is a lot of research that shows that if you are willing to do that, people are going to have, you know, more, well, shall we say, more of a possibility to commit crime, to be part of something that involves bribery or corruption. So there's that element of it, which may not necessarily risk lives, but it means that some people will have opportunities that they shouldn't, and the wrong people will be in the right, and sorry, the wrong people will be in the jobs that other people should have. The other side of it is that if someone does that and they're in a career where they need that knowledge for the safety of others, there can be some pretty serious consequences. There are things that have happened around the world where, for example, pilots or things like doctors have not done what they should have done during the educational process, so they don't necessarily understand the ins and outs of what they're expected to do. They have the qualification, but it was actually someone else who sat the exam for them. So they go to fly a plane or they go to, you know, do surgery, and they're not 100% sure exactly what they're doing. Lives are then at risk. And there are plenty of examples that we can see if you look online where there have been fatalities due to people having a huge lack of integrity, where they have decided that, you know what, I want to do the job, but I don't want to learn how to do it. It looks much cooler if I just turn up and, you know, put the uniform on, but all that learning stuff, that's not really for me. I'm going to get someone else to do that. And then sadly, when you don't know how to pilot a ship, when you don't know how to fly a plane, and you don't know how to, you know, do the correct things in surgery, some pretty serious things can happen.
That makes a lot of sense, but I suppose there's always the risk that when you have these big examples where life is at risk, and we're talking about, you know, big ships or, you know, brain surgery, that's an example I used in a previous episode. But how does that affect me in my daily life? So for the next few months, let's go through it anecdotally. What would a lack of integrity in my daily life potentially build for me personally in the next 20 years? How could that transpire?
So let's say, for example, you decide that you want to, you know, cheat on a really basic exam, something absolutely trivial, could be an English exam. You know, from what I'm aware, not many people have died because of poor grammar. You know, it's pretty unlikely that that's going to happen. You know, unless someone really hates you using bad grammar and they come after you in some form of crazy revenge attack, it's pretty unlikely. So let's say you cheat on an English exam and then 20 years go by, but you now have a very high profile job, or you just have a good job. And then someone decides, you know what? I recognize something that they've written in their English thesis or their English exam. Let's have a look at that and let's run it through a similarity checking system. They're going to do that. And then this happens to tons of people. They find out something they did 20 years ago has now ruined their career. So they get fired from their job, they get taken out of whatever it is they're doing, and they never work in that industry again, if at all, in general. Now, there's that, which has happened to health ministers, to defense ministers, to various different people around the world where, you know, they've done these things.
From as little as a basic test.
Could be a basic test, could be a dissertation, could be a thesis. There's, you know, there's serious things that can happen, all because these people are in positions where they have to be completely trustworthy, mm-hmm. You know, and it can also be other things as well, where, you know, we have a very competitive job market these days, especially due to COVID. And if someone cheats on an exam and gets a job that they shouldn't have because of the skills that they've got, they're taking a job that someone else with the right skill set should have based on their CV. But the other crazy thing is as well, like, you know, like I said, the example earlier of like an English exam, if you're somebody who cheats on an exam and you go on to be an English teacher and you teach people incorrect things, they're then going to have to go ahead and reset things further down the line when, it, you know, they might get a university and not realize that they've been doing things completely wrong. And then they've got to sit through not only learning what they need to learn, but also relearning or unlearning what they've learned that is incorrect, and then relearning that. So that will put a huge amount of pressure on somebody as well. So there could be a ton of issues with it.
So how can we think about integrity in a non-selfish way? Because most of our examples of bad conduct and having a lack of integrity often then end up reflecting badly on ourselves. Yes, other people, but then the guilt of that would weigh on you as an individual. How can we try and shift from a negative perspective onto a more maybe naive, maybe altruistic, but having that positive approach of wanting to have good integrity for the sake of everyone and everything?
Well, there's a few things that you can really think about. So the first one is that integrity doesn't just impact you in the sense of if you do it, it impacts you. You know, so if you've got, let's say you're in a class of people and there's 20 people in this class, and then you have, you know, you do everything right, that's great. But if everyone else is cheating and everyone else is plagiarizing and so on, then they go on to do things that you might not want them to do. So if you're all medical students, you know, you, once again, using a pretty extreme example, if you're all medical students and you're not cheating, but they are, you know that they're doing it, and you know that they may go on to be a doctor for somebody in your family. So there could be huge issues. But the positive side of it is that if you have a culture of integrity, it means that if everyone's on a level playing field, you have everybody competing at the same level. So, you know, everyone has the same opportunities. But it also means that if you have everyone acting with integrity, you're going to have a population of people with a higher skill set, and they're also going to have, you know, more knowledge, which could mean that we get much quicker and faster at developing various things. So, you know, we're in an age now where misinformation is probably one of the biggest issues that we have, you know, fake news and various other things. So if you can imagine, you know, if people put as much effort into actually doing realistic and real things, we would be so much further forward. And obviously the situation we're in now, where everyone is questioning every element of science and development that we make in medicine, you know, if everyone acted with integrity, we would have so many people who would be the next person to create potentially, you know, the next cure for an illness. We could have the next engineer who's going to create the next huge evolution in transport, you know, all because instead of cheating, instead of getting information from elsewhere, they're actually learning and putting the emphasis on gaining knowledge. And because they've acted with integrity, they're doing the right thing, taking potentially the more difficult path, but they're getting so much more out of it. And the world in general, I know it sounds very a bit cliche, but the world in general will get a lot more out of that as well.
So it's choosing the difficult but right path as opposed to the easy and lazy path.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people always say it, the kind of, if it was easy, everybody would do it. You know, sometimes it isn't easy to do the right thing because there could be a massive incentive to do the wrong thing. But in the long run, it's going to be much better for you to do the right thing.
So as you say, when we stop thinking about integrity as a one person issue and a one isolated situation, what role do people play when it's someone else's integrity that's compromised?
So there's a really good set of almost like definitions of what is academic integrity, but I think this plays a role in integrity as a whole. And that's one thing we really have to focus on, not just focusing on academic integrity or personal integrity. We have to focus on just integrity. One of the most important things that I find in that list of terms is courage. And it's having the courage to stand up when you know things are wrong, when you know that things aren't working out. So I used the example earlier of a group of medical students, or you're all in the same class, you're all studying for the same degree. You're not cheating, but you know that other people are. Now, you could take the easy option. You know, once again, we said earlier, sometimes it's easier just to, you know, let it go. You can do that, but those people may go on to be a surgeon who performs surgery for your parents. They could go on to be a pharmacist who prescribes drugs to your family to help them get better. But unfortunately, you know that they haven't done the right thing. So would you feel comfortable knowing that and then letting them go and do it? Now, not everyone's going to be a medical student, but you have to take that same approach to it. You've got to have the courage to say, look, this isn't right. First of all, they're potentially going to get a job that you deserve or your friends deserve because you've done the right thing. But also as well, you know, they don't have the knowledge. So it's having that courage to either say to them or say to your peers, to, you know, instructors, professors, your boss, doesn't matter what setting it is, to say, look, this is what's going on, because you need to know that those people at some point will be relied upon for the information that they potentially have. So courage is definitely one of the most important things in there. And when we go back to this huge issue of people doing things that they shouldn't do but thinking they're going to get away with it, everyone knows that these things will come out sooner rather than later. You know, it's going to happen. If you look at what I mentioned earlier with the health ministers and so on and so forth, I mentioned Warren Buffett at the very beginning and how he, when he looks at hiring people, one of the main things he looks at is, you know, do they have integrity? Do I actually want to work with that person? And when you think about some of the things that he said, one of the quotes that he said quite a long time ago now sticks with me all the time. And it's something that I wish was on like a billboard outside of every single university and outside of every business. And it takes 20 years to build a career and 5 minutes to destroy it. If you think about things like that, you'll do things differently. Because if you think about things when you go, right, I could take the easy option, I could do this, I could do this. Yeah, you could. But what happens in 20 years? What happens in 30 years when you either need the information that you don't know or someone finds out that you did that? Everything's over. So it's super important to, you know, like I say, have that courage, act with integrity and do it all the time and not just some of the time.
So now joining me on the podcast is Katya Levchenko, which is an incredible name, I have to say. So Katya is a great colleague here at Tinitin, and I'm really excited to be discussing the development in different areas across the world, especially as far as integrity goes as a growing concept, because most of us understand the word and the idea and the value, but where that's not so much the case, it's interesting to hear how this can be growing. So thank you very much for joining me today, Katya. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I was just wondering what your greatest experience has been through pushing integrity.
Well, first of all, Mark, thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast, and thanks a lot for the introduction. So in terms of the greatest experience, probably one thing that comes to my mind at this point is, you know, to see the journey of the customers, whereas, you know, when they realize they might have a problem with academic integrity and they need to establish certain things in place, you know, and for example, they were ready to partner with Tinitin, and we helped them, you know, and held their hand on that journey. And we could see great improvements, you know, within not just the students' writing skills, but overall how the whole culture on the institutional level has improved, and they're definitely moving forward. So to see the actual results and changes to a better, probably that is kind of the best reward that one can have.
Mm-hmm. And so what is that better position that you're striving for? What is the ideal situation or condition that we're working towards here?
So in general, you know, many institutions, you can put on a scale what we call the maturity level, right? Some institutions, they are just at the beginning of that path from plagiarism to academic integrity. And many people, they also get confused between two. They believe that plagiarism and academic integrity is the same, but actually it's not. And basically, if you think about that path, so institution might realize that, okay, we have a problem and we need to do something with this problem. So they establish a culture in place. And then as the years go by, you can see that, you know, they don't have that problem anymore. They are they transition to a next stage. For example, where they have the check-in elements in place, they have certain policies in place, but it's not a formative approach as yet. So the next stage when actually, you know, the student outcomes would be the number one goal for the institution. So not just fighting against potential plagiarism, but actually helping students to and creating more learning opportunities for students. And then if you think about you know, what would be the end goal, probably where, first of all, it is sustainable. Second of all, it's all about, you know, having assessments in place, not just the grade, not just checking papers, but actually putting a student probably in the center of everything, because at the end of the day, that's why universities exist, you know, to actually help students to become just great individuals. So I would say the end goal would be, you know, having that kind of environment.
So what challenges do you face in achieving that goal on that sliding scale? Like, are there any variations in these challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I can describe it in short, within the region that I'm responsible for, and that would be, you know, Western Europe, Iberia, Central Eastern Europe, Eurasia, majority, especially if I think about, you know, certain countries, it's the mindset. And I would say old school, or, you know, how we were taught years ago, and the system that was in place years ago, just in general, how educators think, you know, they need to deliver the knowledge to students. So it's the mindset of educators, mindset of students, and of course, you know, the third element would be the administration of the university. So that's the biggest challenge when many institutions, they think, yes, they need to do something because, you know, it's a hot topic on a national level, if you think in every single country. But most of them would go through that exercise as a, you know, just tick the box. So the good thing is that I can still see that as time goes by, you know, we can see the changes for better. And definitely, you know, the teachers, we can see new generation, different types of students, and the entire situation is improving.
So where do you see us evolving from where we are now until the next 10 years in the future, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. If you think not just about, you know, the culture of honesty, but also the level of digitalization, educational market is so far behind of, you know, any other industry, if you wish. So, for example, these days, if you want to check your balance, you don't have to go to the bank anymore, right? You have an app and you do everything on your phone. Where when it comes to education, we still think, well, not after the COVID, but previously you would have to be on campus, you know, you would have to physically probably write something down, you know, using a pen and a paper, etc. Again, different regions, you can map them out in terms of a different, I would say, level of advancement. So even within Europe, you know, certain countries, they are quite digital, you know, they are very much ahead of the game. They resolve the issue of, you know, academic dishonesty already. They've been doing that for years. And now they striving towards, you know, what would be that tipping point to become a modern type of institution, right? And again, the main goal for that is how to attract the best students, you know, international talent, but also your local students. So for most of, again, the region that I can speak about, we would just have to basically catch up a little bit with those countries that are kind of far ahead at the moment. So first is to create sustainable approach towards, you know, the culture of honesty, where we'll have not just tools in place, but to have that formative approach. Then, of course, you know, work towards the digitalization of educational environment. And then hopefully years from now, we will be able to, you know, to make sure that the student will be the most important element and everything will be done for kind of students' interest.
So growing up in an educational system that's very different from my own, I'm really interested in finding out what your experience was through education and what you were taught about integrity and plagiarism and such to then lead you to work on pushing this for everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of, you know, why integrity is important for me personally, I was raised in a family where my mom was a librarian, and then later on she became a director of the library. And my dad was a researcher at some engineering institute. So therefore, kind of, you know, the educational environment was always there. Reading books was always important. And from day one, of course, my parents taught me, you know, that one has to be honest and, you know, you shouldn't do harm or any bad things. And it's important to, I don't think, you know, the plagiarism as such was there from the beginning, not even from the school days. We never really discussed it, you know, in greater detail. Yes, we were taught how to cite properly, you know, how to do the reference to the original sources, but not so much about academic integrity as such. So when I graduated from my school, in general, I thought that, you know, school was great. Teachers were really passionate. They were earning peanuts, but they really loved what they were doing. So therefore, if the kid was really willing to learn, you could definitely get a lot of knowledge just from, you know, your normal school days. So when I graduated from school and I got to my university, at the same time, I also started working at the university library. So therefore, again, you know, that kind of being surrounded by educators all the time, it just becomes, you know, part of you, part of who you are in general, and part of your beliefs. So yeah, therefore, not so much once again about, you know, plagiarism, what is bad, academic integrity, good, but it was just in general, and you know, an experience of being a student and knowing that, okay, well, you have homework to deliver, you need to go and listen to lectures, and you know, just go through the through that experience.
Get the job done, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can imagine that one of the biggest challenges you face on a daily basis is dealing with people such as yourself who understand this from their own backgrounds, and then also people who maybe don't understand or maybe don't agree. How does that sort of manifest itself on a daily basis for you?
Yeah, so in general, when, you know, representatives of institutions, they come to us and they ask for our help, then of course we go through the process and we have several meetings, conversations with many people, right? As you can imagine, it's not just one person that is in charge of making this kind of decisions on behalf of entire institution, but actually the what we would refer as decision-making unit is quite big. Essentially, everything will be decided on the board. So normally, a very enthusiastic representative would get in touch with us. Somebody who is truly, you know, truly believes in the greatness of changing the culture on institutional level, the need of having that, you know, high standard of education in general. And if you think about especially differentiator factor of any institution, what would it be? It's the quality of degree and diploma that you issue. And therefore, it cannot be without an element of having complete honesty and, you know, academic integrity at the core. So that would be the starting point. But then as, you know, we progress with the whole, you know, negotiation process, if you wish, of course, during several meetings, we meet completely different people. And I can see, especially if I can, you know, refer to an old school educators that are generally, first of all, not good at not just, you know, accepting any kind of new digital tools, but any change, full stop. So especially those educators, in my experience, I've seen that they would be really kind of against it because they purely believe that they know better. They read enough books and enough theses throughout, you know, their educational journey, and therefore they don't need any help or any improvement. They know it better. So you always get an element of very enthusiastic people that, and most of the time, you know, it wouldn't even be the full-time job. It would be an educator or dean or vice rector that at the same time is also passionate about academic integrity and wants to see changes, you know, for better on institutional level. But of course, you always get those people that, you know, are against any changes, or they just purely don't believe that such problem exists.
I totally understand that. It must be such a great feeling, though, to know that you started from, as you say, you know, a much less mature market in certain areas, and then to have seen progression across so many different regions to see where we are today. That must be such a great accomplishment for you personally.
Absolutely. 6 years ago, when I started with Turnitin, I found myself in a position where even, you know, contacting universities and trying to have conversation about academic integrity, I was not understood. It was perceived as, you know, we have bigger challenges here than whatever topic you're trying to address and what is academic integrity in general. And I'm very pleased to see that, you know, just a few years later, we're facing completely different situation where on a national level, every country would have certain legislation that stipulates, you know, what academic integrity is, why plagiarism is actually bad. And in some countries, obviously, they would even, you know, legally punish you for cases of plagiarism.
That's just got to be an incredible growth arc for you to watch. And finally, what role does positive rhetoric play in this discussion and changing this mindset? Because as I've spoken with other people on this topic, it's often the difference is that people think about it in a negative perspective when actually they need to really focus on the positives. And from there, hopefully we'll see some personal growth. So in your opinion, what role does this positive rhetoric play?
Well, to give you a short answer straight away, huge, obviously. If you think even about, you know, Turnitin solutions and what we provide to institutions, in essence, the Turnitin solution should be used as a formative tool where students can, you know, check their own papers, they can see the results, they can revise. Teachers will provide feedback on top, and that's how students would learn and understand how to basically produce an original paper. But many students perceive Turnitin as a, you know, punishing tool because it is not used in the way how it should be. And many educators would just use our solution just to check student paper for plagiarism, and that's about it. So not having that educational element and especially positive connotation of it's not about plagiarism, it's not about punishing, it's actually helping you to, you know, develop critical thinking skills and original thinking skills. So moving that from, you know, negative, I will punish you, plagiarism bad, etc., to let me teach you, let me help you to understand, you know, what it means to cite properly, to think originally, to reference to original sources. And, you know, the same applies to plagiarism versus academic integrity. So because in general, if you think about plagiarism, you know, what words can you, you know, link to that, let's say, description. So plagiarism, it's like stealing, right? It's submitting somebody else's idea, as your own. So it's all very heavy and negative. And if you think about, you know, switch it and think about academic integrity, you would say, well, integrity, it's, you know, it's being honest, right? It's basically not stealing, not lying. So the minute you shift it from, you know, very heavy, something negative to, let's just focus on helping you get to the point where, you know, you don't need to even be scared of, you know, being potentially caught, because there's no need for that. So that definitely, you know, shifts the whole topic from when students just, they don't understand the topic, they hate it, they feel that they've been discriminated and it's all against them, versus, well, actually we want to help you to become a professional and after graduation to get a good job and be very successful in your role.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm so excited to hear the full product when it's put together. And now on the podcast, I'm joined by Silvana Pieri, and we're going to have a discussion just about the sort of societal changes that integrity can bring and potentially has already brought in certain parts. So thank you, Silvana, for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. I'd first of all like to ask, what is it about integrity that is so important in having a sort of uniformity across societies?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. And integrity is a very important topic when we talk about education, when we talk about, society, life in general. And uniformity is a key concept, if you want. Integrity is the path that we should follow in order to do the right things, to bring the right things into society. So it is important also to have a unified idea of what integrity is. Again, education can play obviously a pivotal role to become the citizens of the future, right? The ones that will be able to shape a society that is founded on the right values. So while, you know, we are students, while we study, while we are on our academic path, that's where we can actually think about all this, where we can really experiment what that means and learn, and then, you know, go ahead and bring what we've learned into the society.
So what gaps in societies and territories have played a significant role in these societies? Like, what difference does it make?
Well, I mean, if we talk specifically about academic integrity, there are a lot of different perceptions of what integrity is and what integrity means. So obviously, integrity is a very wide definition, right? It covers everything and anything. When we look at application of integrity in different aspects of our life, then the borders become a little bit blurry. And that's where you are called to make a choice, to have an idea about what is it that I should do? Is this an ethical decision that I'm making or not, right? So in education, when we talk about academic integrity, of course, we refer to the idea of always being true, be original. And if we do take ideas from other thinkers, then we should always report where, you know, what the source of that content is. And this is where things become a little bit complicated, and not in every country or in every territory we have the same perception of this integrity. There are, how can I say, the fact that there is a more oral as opposed as to a written tradition in exams or assessment makes these borders a little bit grayer area, right? So sometimes it's considered a minor mistake not to properly cite an author, or not to mention that particular content has been taken by a source on internet or anywhere else. And that's where the problem is. first of all, of course, there is a lack of recognition on, you know, of the people that have thought or written certain things before you, but also it's dangerous because it undermines our the possibility to really produce original ideas, which is key. Yeah? If you think about it, when we go and study what we want to do, we want to be able to learn for sure, and that we do it by learning from whoever came before us. And the ultimate goal is to go towards evolution. So to add to anything that has already been said, that has already been written. And in order to do so, you need to be able to again, produce original ideas. But if we don't recognize what's original and what's not, what is our own effort and what's not, then we might end up not being innovative at the end. And society in particular, well, it has always been like that. You know, evolution always requires a certain level of innovation. Otherwise, you get stuck where you are, and whatever obstacle or problem you are facing now, it's not going to have a solution.
That's on a very individual basis. So then when we're looking at society as a whole, what can we all benefit from a better recognition of integrity?
Well, it's difficult to like separate the idea of every single individual can do, because society is made by individuals, right? So that's where we have to start in order to create then a unified view. That's the thing. That's what we are trying to do here, right? Is to, the concept is already there, and it's already one, if you want, right? The problem is that because of the difference in culture, the difference in goals that somebody wants to reach, ideals, sometimes the perception of these values is different, and that's the dangerous part. So that's what education is called to do, to make sure there is a formal rigor that is always assured, because we cannot interpret certain things. It shouldn't be like that. Yeah, the truth is already there, and to get closer to that truth is what education is called to, and every single individual is called to do. Cool. Yeah, with certain things, and sometimes technology can help to do in order to be more objective.
So when we're talking about cultural differences versus that uniformity of integrity and value, where do the two meet, and what potential challenges can there be when they don't necessarily meet on the same page?
That's a complicated question, because we live in a very in a society with a lot of diversity as well, which is great, because we cannot have only one way of seeing things, one way of thinking, and cultural differences have to be always protected. However, the risk or the threat can be that if we don't find a common ground where everybody agree on the high level value, then you might end up being perceived as different without the respect of this difference, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So difference is great, but then we need to agree on something that is common for everybody, that should lead us all. It needs to be clear what integrity is. There shouldn't be any doubt. There shouldn't be questions like, I did this thing. Is that not on the path of integrity? Well, I don't know. No, that cannot be. You know, we need to be able to always recognize, and then you can, you know, everybody can make their choices, but then it has to be clear what is right and what is wrong, basically.
So when we're looking at kind of the strategy of really implementing integrity, not, as you say, just into institutions, but also into the mindsets of individuals who then, as a larger picture, build up our societies with those cultural differences, what would you say is one of the most important aspects of that strategy?
I guess that one of the most important thing is that, you know, we are looking at an ecosystem, if you want, where there are different actors, right? So we have the institution, we have the society, we have the teachers, we have the students, we have, you know, in a bigger picture, it's society, citizens, and so on. And everybody plays a role. So the idea is to really make sure that every single actor is aware and is on the same page. So we cannot, sometimes I think that, you know, we tend to focus on one players rather than another to bring the attention on one side of the issue as opposed to another. And this is dangerous because you'll never get to the bottom of it, in the sense that everybody, every single actor, everybody who is involved in this ecosystem needs to be on the same page. So for example, when we talk about academic integrity, we need to make sure that institution has clear policy and clear guidelines on that. Teachers need to be on board and need to educate students. And students also need to understand and be responsible for their education, understand what they need, and also ask for it. So they have to be part of it all. And sometimes, especially in education, you know, you see that students are always perceived as the last part of the tale. I think this is not necessarily a winning approach. So what I was thinking about, you know, in my role as a territory manager for Tornitin, we talk a lot about how to bring awareness within our territories around these kind of topics. I'm thinking more and more about this bottom-up approach where we should start talking more with students in this case, because it's their futures that we are talking about. And it almost sounds like up until now, this topic of integrity has been seen like, or has been used as a weapon, if you want, against them. You know, they feel like they will be punished for something wrong that they do. But, you know, it's absolutely not about that. Here it's about helping students to build up their academic writing skills, their moral fiber, to help them to become original thinkers. So why the student wouldn't want to, you know, take advantage of technologies and anything that educational technology can offer them to get to the level that eventually they want to get to.
So when we're talking about technology in an academic setting, and even just in society in general, what weaknesses do you find in people's understanding? Is there a generational difference? Is there a lack of initiative? Because digitalization is so important, but it's not widespread. We lack that uniformity that we were talking about previously.
That's a very good question with not an easy answer. Depends very much on the territory that you look at. Of course, in Europe, for example, we see that there is no uniformity, not even in terms of digitalization. We have countries that are highly digitalized and countries which are not. And this has an impact on the academic setting as well, because academia is very much in the hands of old-fashioned professors, if you want, which means that they have a lot of knowledge. They're great teachers, you know, can really give a lot, but the level of digitalization is not there simply because they haven't experienced it from a very early point in their life. And on the other hand, we have students that nowadays have, you know, they were born in the digitalized area. So that means that they know exactly how to use any sort of device and how to use technology at their advantage. What happens is that, you know, they might be ready to really take full advantage of what technology can bring also in their student life. And yet institutions are not ready to offer them that kind of support in the way they really need, right? Because as I said, this dichotomy really brought up this idea that education technology is there to spy on you, to check that you're doing the right thing, because you're not doing the right thing. We know you are cheating, you know? And this is such a shame, and it's something that has to be really unbuilt, if you want. And that's why I'm thinking that the more we speak with the student, the more we understand how they perceive things, and if we help them to understand how this can be useful for them, I'm sure that in no time they would be on board. They would be the one asking, yes, we want more education technology in our everyday student life. We want more feedback. We want more originality checking solutions, because that's how we can become aware of what we do right and wrong and how we can get better at what we do.
So it sounds like our approach from this conversation is very much sort of trying to address every person involved, which sounds like it's everyone, in a way that's accessible and suitable to them, and showing their own individual benefits from integrity. What do you think is a common thread that runs between all of these people?
The final goal is really, you know, towards building up, again, a better society. This is our responsibility for future generations. So it is absolutely essential that everybody contributes towards that. But how can you do that, right? Yeah, that's the question. And it means that, you know, we are not born with a certain set of values or skills. There are things that need to be developed. And like growing up with, you know, building up a moral fiber is something that it's a constant research, right? It's not something that just happens. You have to work on it. And you cannot work on it by yourself. It has to be within a network, within the society itself. That's why we are talking about, you said before, like it looks like everybody, you know, is involved in this. And it is exactly that. Everybody is involved in this process. So we cannot, yes, we act as individuals in a society, in a network. So, and we need to help each other to, you know, work towards this this evolution that we were mentioning before, right? In the education, I always go back because obviously that's my field, but when we are in an educational setting, of course, there is a responsibility from the teachers, from the educators to help students to be stimulated enough, to be exposed to certain inputs that will help them to reflect, to think, to make connection, and again, to build up that moral fiber that we're talking about. And it's not easy because, you know, when we talk about these sort of values, when we talk about integrity, when we talk about being ethical, I mean, it's a known thing that it's tough. You're always called to make a tough decision. It's never black or white, and you need to be able to really think in a critical way and be responsible.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Silvana. I really appreciate your time, and I'm very excited to hear this whole episode put together. And so there we have it, the end of this episode and the whole mini-series of Integrity. Thank you so much to my guests, Jason, Silvana, and Katia from today. I think we've learned loads about growth mindset and, you know, the differences that play a part in sort of understanding integrity, whether that's regional or generational or just access to digital tools. Getting students on board and understanding how we can all play a role in building a better society has been such an interesting topic that was brought up today, especially when Silvana mentioned that individuals playing a role in society is essential because society is only made up of individuals. I thought that was just a really interesting point, and I'm so grateful to all of them for joining us on this series and this episode. So yes, thank you to them, and until the next episode, thanks. Bye.